service is provided by freeconferencecall.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound or hash sign.
Time record battery.
You entered 8957 91. If this is correct, press 1. Three. There are 13 participants in the conference.
Hi, Jim.
Please announce yourself.
I have the minutes.
Good morning, everybody. It's 10 a.m. on May 23rd, 2020. This is the meeting of the Seward County Board of Supervisors. We're originating from the our administration building in the Seward County. Public access provided via conference call. We also have a text number on our agenda if somebody wants to text in a question, and the text is 515-451-7293. Would ask if you are on the call, would you please mute your phone? And if you need to speak, then you need to unmute your phone in star 6. I've called the meeting to order, and please feel free to join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. And why the meeting is in person is impossible and impractical, and we've been meeting this way now for several weeks due to their guidance of having no more than 10 people in a gathering. I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Hiddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda is adopted. Next we have updates on COVID-19. Are there any staff updates today? Hearing none, are there any updates from the supervisors?
I don't have any at this particular time.
Okay. My view, and this just occurred in the last 2 minutes, I once again went into the bathroom, tried to enter the bathroom, and found an employee without a face mask. And when I asked the employee, since she did not report to the Board of Supervisors, would she please go let her supervisor know that she had done that, it had been my understanding from our internal operations that all of the other elected officials had voluntarily agreed to enforce what the Board of Supervisors would like would be in common areas that face masks be worn. So I have now requested from HR, since Noelle McClatchy is in here today, but I'll let you know, Alyssa, at the same time. Alyssa, I'd like to get that in writing from you in memo form, that in fact you had a conversation with each one of the other elected officials, and whether they did or did not agree that they would voluntarily tell their staff to enforce the common areas. Masks being worn in the common areas. So,
how do you think Alyssa's on the phone right now?
Okay, then it was with Noelle. And, oh, okay. And then also to just let the other elected officials know that this particular person, she said to me, I'm 6 feet away from you, so don't worry about it. And then she prompted me to move out of the way, which was a good prompt, you know, so she could get out. But I was really shocked. So I'd like to know who's on the page and who's not on the page so that I personally, as one supervisor trying to protect at least the Board of Supervisors staff and others who might be coming into the building, that what do I need to do as an individual supervisor, or what do we need to do and what can we legally do as a Board of Supervisors to take some common precautions in the common areas. So with that, thank you.
Well, how
many more times do I or any other employee have to risk going into the restroom and encountering this situation?
Okay, now which are item 7, public comment number 1. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Are there any public comments? I'll wait a minute in case somebody needs to unmute their microphone. Are there any public comments, any text messages?
There do not appear to be any text messages.
Okay, and hearing nobody, I will close public comments session. And we'll go to discussion consideration of items brought before the board with request for immediate action. And I know of none. Does anybody else know of anything that we could need a 24-hour notice on that needs immediate action? Seeing none, I'll move on. Agency reports, there are none. Consideration of, going to consideration of minutes. We have 6 sets, and I already informed Shelley of one minor typo of word administration in the 5:15 minutes. Are there any other corrections?
I have not had time to look at them.
They were sent to us by email this morning.
Anything that comes to us in the last hour before a meeting seems a little unrealistic, and I've got them physically here. We could move them to the bottom. I could try and read in between the other items on the agenda.
Okay, I did read them quickly, so I would be ready if you want
to
do
that. I honestly didn't have the time to really read through them.
Okay, let's bring them to the next Tuesday's meeting.
Yeah, that would be fine.
So move them to next Tuesday's agenda. Consideration of personnel actions. I don't believe there are any. Next is consideration of claims. Are there any? Is there a motion to approve the claims?
So moved.
Second.
Evans?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Claims are approved. Consent agenda.
I move as presented.
Second.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda is approved. So then we go to item 14, public hearing items. The first one is consideration of resolution 20.94. So keep going. Okay. Please do.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Me?
No,
that leaves. Okay.
The proposed amendment was published on 5/14, and all 3 newspapers as required by law. You had the documentation since the 5/5, I think. So if anybody had any questions, I would gladly answer them. Or if there's any questions today, I will. I'm not going to go into details because you have that information out there. Overall, the revenues are being increased by 2%, which does exclude the bond proceeds of $5 million that is incurring this fiscal year. It's $918,000 higher than the 2018 amendment. Expenses are being increased by 5.25%, which is $2.7 million higher than the 2018 amendment budget. The big ticket items are secondary roads, $750,000, conservation projects, including the Figure of Watershed Improvement Land Acquisition, Mental Health Regional Payment, that's a big one. And the remaining salaries that were originally budgeted 95%. So, after this amendment, the unassigned general slash supplemental ending fund balance will be about 27%. Our policy is 25%, so we're there. The rural will be at 17%. Secondary roads at 23% almost. Overall, there's a $20.3 million ending fund balance. Of that amount, right at half of it are restricted funds, 993 committed, and 3.1 assigned. So there's $6.2 million unassigned. Anybody have any questions of me?
No.
Okay, this is a public hearing. So if there aren't any questions, I'll open the public hearing. Are there any comments from the public? Okay, Hearing no comments, I'll close the public hearing and entertain a motion for approval of Resolution 20.94, the FY20 budget amendment.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? None. Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Adopted. Next, we have another public hearing, which is the second consideration. Thank you, Lisa. Second consideration of ordinance number 288, amending certain boundaries of the Official Zoning Act of Story County. Amelia Shoneman. Amelia.
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
Sorry.
Okay. One of the problems with conference calls, you can't tell who's going to say hello first. So please continue.
Yes. You heard the first consideration of this rezoning request at your last meeting and approved it. This is again the second consideration of Ordinance 288, rezoning the environmentally sensitive areas and floodplains as part of the Prairie Valley subdivision site to the Greenbelt Conservation District to provide further protection to those areas. At the last meeting, there was some discussion of had there been a second survey done of these environmentally sensitive areas as recommended by Dr. Rosberg's initial report, and I provided some information on that in the memo. There had been a second survey done in the spring, and I included a map on the agenda center to show the prairie remnants that were identified that are part of this rezoning. I'm happy to take any other questions, but staff would recommend the approval upon second consideration of Ordinance 288 and waiving the third consideration.
So, Amelia, this is Linda, and I did look at the two maps of the Prairie Survey and didn't print them to overlay them. Can you assure us that there were not any additional sensitive lands found on the second survey from the first one?
Yes, I think the second survey, those points that you see on the second survey map directly translated into, if you recall from the preliminary plat, those yellow prairie areas with the solid line, I think that's the basis for those yellow areas on those yellow outlined prairie remnant areas, this second study.
Okay, so all of the prairie remnants were taken into account when the map was drawn for Greenbelt Conservation rezoning?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And including a buffer of at least 35 feet around the remnants.
Okay. That was what I wanted just to make sure of. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
No, I just want to make sure. So based on your question, if there was the map was overlaid, it did equal what was protected. Is that correct, Amelia?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, good.
I have one, and it's a confirmation from the county attorney's office that, in fact, for us to rezone a piece of property is within our legal rights, correct, and is in accordance with the zoning laws of the state, correct?
This is Ethan. I don't see a problem with the board rezoning. Amelia and I shared an email last week about the rezoning process. I can't remember here off the top of my head where we ended that discussion.
The supervisors received a correspondence correspondence from someone who seemed to feel that we were not following our own zoning law, and I want to make sure that we are in fact able to rezone legally. Changing zoning is part of our right, correct? And part of the law.
Yeah, I mean under Article 335, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's the answer I was looking for. Thank you.
Are there any other questions specific to Ordinance Number 288? Okay, this is another public hearing item, so I will open the public hearing. Are there any members of the public who would like to comment? Any text messages?
It does not appear that I have received any text messages on this.
Okay, then I will close the public hearing. Entertain a motion for approval of ordinance number 288 on second consideration, and we also, in my committee, that we could waive third consideration.
Yes. That was based on, you know, the comments from the last public hearing were mainly on the subdivision, and there is a next agenda for the Board of Supervisors is a limited agenda as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you can wait on third consideration.
Yes, the questions were regarding the subdivision, not about, as I recall, also not about the ordinance moving some of the land from residential to green belt conservation and the rest from ag to green belt conservation. Correct?
Yes.
So then I would entertain a motion, and if you want to waive third consideration and part of it, include it in May.
I have you next, or is it me?
I just did the last one.
Oh, sorry. Okay, thank you. Okay, so I move that we approve Ordinance 288, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County from A1 Agricultural District and R2 Transitional Residential District to the GB-C Greenbelt-Conservation District, as put forth in case REZ01-20 on second consideration and waiving third consideration.
Did you say R1 transitional or R2?
I said R1 transitional residential, which is what I read right off of the sheet.
Okay. I'll second.
The move is seconded to approve on ordinance number 288 on second consideration and to waive third consideration. Any further discussion? Not all in favor? Excuse me. Olson?
Aye.
Herring?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. Now, additional items. Mr. Watson, we have you back up to 2090-95.
Budget amendment was awesome, but now we got to appropriate those dollars in order to spend them. So this appropriates the remaining dollars plus the amended dollars for each department.
Okay, any questions?
No. No, it's pretty clear.
Entertain a motion for approval.
I move approval of Resolution 20-95.
I second.
Okay.
I'll go back to the election.
Okay, Penn.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. 295 is adopted. Now we have discussion and consideration of a hiring freeze exception for county attorney victim witness interns, Kim Nelson and Julie Erickson.
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Because we're asking to fill three intern positions that we normally have. As the interns come and go as they progress through their educational situation, and these three positions are open. We haven't filled them yet because we haven't had trials, and now our trials have been pushed off again pursuant to an order that was issued on 5/22 to September, but with the number of cases, jury trials that we have pending, we're really going to need the extra help. These are already budgeted for in our budget. So we're asking the board to fill these three positions.
Tim, I have a question for you. So in the interim here, since those trials aren't going to happen until September, I'm assuming maybe explain to me a little bit on the need for the hire at this point. Is there a lot of prep work or something that needs to be done prior? If you could just elaborate a little bit more, I'd appreciate that.
Well, as we move forward closer to reopening jury trials in Story County, we'll need to start coordinating multiple cases for trials with witnesses. And we don't plan on bringing back these interns now. We were, as you know, originally scheduled to start jury trials again July 13th. That's when we put the request in, and now that's been continued out, so we don't plan on bringing them in probably until late July or August. So there is a lot of prep work that goes into coordinating jury trials, and since the delay, we have a significant backlog of cases that will need to be tried in relatively short order once the court reopens again.
And what's the September date now? Or is it just September?
I believe it's September 13th.
So you're saying you would not bring the interns on until July now because of that change?
Yes, and we need some time to train them so they have enough experience to carry out their duties.
So this is Supervisor Olson. My question has to do with timing, because since your litigation staff, is that the correct term for it, for those people who would be, or is it their criminal staff? Your term, but please let me know what is correct. But those people who have been working mostly remotely or all remotely now, so were these not tasks that they could have done or could do while working remotely?
They have been taking up some of that slack, but more importantly, when hearings are scheduled and we have to bring people in and we have to notify them of the upcoming hearings and we have to prepare them to be witnesses, there's more paperwork that goes into it. We do have one temporary worker that we've kept that has been fulfilling a lot of those duties. But when things pick up again, we're going to need the extra help.
Thank you. Before the courts closed down because of COVID-19, how many interns did you have working with victim witness?
We normally have 3 to 5. I think we had 5 going into the last semester, the spring semester.
Okay, and are you planning on having these interns do the victim witness work rather than asking permission to hire the position that, again, before COVID-19 hit and the economic downturn, that we had approved for your office?
They would be doing, they will, well, we're going to have to carry on what we were doing before. The additional position that we wanted to have for a full-time victim witness person, we're not asking for at this time due to the economic downturn. Certainly that would be a better option, but we will need these 3 positions filled.
Any other questions?
I guess my one other question is for clarification. On your request, it had a preferred start date of June 2020, and you're saying your start date wouldn't be until July 2020. Is that correct?
Correct. Depending on how the conditions are, I mean, I don't know if the court's going to issue further delays or not.
So July would be the earliest, it sounds like.
Correct.
Other questions, Board?
I guess we would like the approval so that we can bring them in when we need them, but we do need to start looking for them and interviewing people.
Certainly, as close as you can, that's understandable. Okay. Any other questions, Board?
I don't have a question. It's a comment in that this request to me seems to be similar to what I consider on the level of the detention officer request for the sheriff that we approved previously, in that there have been interns in the county attorney's office for many years, and they have been involved, you know, with this type of work before. So I recognize that they have been kept busy in the past, and therefore have been proven necessary. These have been proven necessary, and I feel more comfortable with this than I do in dealing with internships, which are not permanent positions, as opposed to looking instead at a hiring a full time person. That's my comment. Thank you.
I also think the idea of using the interns, because there's, in cases you get affected more by the economic downturn, that allows more flexibility than a permanent employment position. So I really appreciate it, Tim, that you're willing to look at, the potential situation in the county and flexibility. So, I think we have, I don't know that we need to put a date in here, because we understand the intent is not to hire until July, and what you're going to be doing is starting the process. So I'd entertain a motion for regarding this request.
I move that we accept the hiring freeze exception for County Attorney Victim Assistance Interns.
We want to say three interns.
Three interns.
And do we want to give the county attorney the option of start date?
I don't think we
okay.
Motion
yet. Well, second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the exception to the hiring freeze for three interns for victim witness for the county attorney's office. Hedden?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Mark and I. Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Board.
Next, we have Sandra King for discussion consideration of revised open records policy after the 7-day review. Did we have any comments? Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, Board. Yes, we did have some feedback from three department heads elected officially. At the last board meeting, the open records policy went out for review, and we did get these three back. And it's my understanding that they rewrite the records.
Correct. And in the future, when you get them, if you could pass them on to the board at the same time. We did get one because one comment was copied to us, but that lets us think in advance. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Can you
speak up,
please?
Yes. Okay. The first one is from Margaret James, Environmental Health. It says, I reviewed the policy and only have a couple of comments. Should the policy include a person's name and contact information, or should we just refer to the person's title? As you know, Environmental Health receives multiple requests on a daily basis for records on subjects, wells, complaints, schools, etc. I assume it is still acceptable to provide documents for routine requests without submitting the request to the public request liaison for review. This decision would be at the discretion of the department director. Controversial or time-consuming requests would be sent to the public request liaison for review. Good job, Margaret. The next one is from Sheriff Fitz. It says, in 2010, we at the Sheriff's Office created our own open records policy and then last updated it in 2017. We will stay with our own policy. As a comment, in the BOS draft policy, Sandra King is referred to by name and position. Should the policy refer to the position only, you wouldn't need to change the policy each time a personnel change is made. Just thought I would mention it and share this. The next one is from Jerry Moore, Planning and Development. Please see a few comments from the Planning and Development regarding the records policy and procedure. Number one, if we have a form, should we require the general public to use it? For people that have electronic means, a copy can easily be made available to them, or a copy can be printed for those persons who request information and are in a county building, or may be required a form if the request involves more than 10 pages of information, and or if it's an unusual request that needs a written explanation, and or they are requesting the information on an unusual media. A reason for requesting a form is we have a date the request was made. If it's a verbal request, it may be harder to keep track of the actual date the request was made. Another thought, we are currently working through the form/applications that will be available on CitizenServe. Couldn't we require requesters to use CitizenServe to submit information requests? Elisa's answer. We can't require a form. We can request them to complete one, but Iowa Code states the county shall fulfill requests for a copy of a public record received in writing by telephone or by electronic means. Number two, regarding redacting confidential information, should the policy identify who county attorney's representative reviews the records to determine what, if any, information should be redacted? Alyssa's answer. While the county attorney's representative may advise this on certain requests, there also may be situations that we redact for all situations. Number three, regarding the county providing the information in a form that is readily accessible to the requester, will this be treated on a case-by-case basis, and the county determines what is reasonable? Alyssa's answer, yes. That is how it's currently being handled. We have communicated with the requester concerning this in the past and worked out a solution. Number four, who will collect the fee from the requester? Are we to require fees if we send items by email? Alyssa's answer, the department office that incurs the fees. No, typically there are no fees associated with a request if fulfilled by email, unless there are staff hours incurred greater than 1 hour. Number five, what about the internal collection and communication process? On simple records requests of records, site, plan, zoning permit application, recorded document, our department maintains or keeps or records that are downloaded to Tyler. Our department's past practice normally has been to find and collect the records and email them to the requester and copy you, now Sandra. If it's an extensive request, we find or collect all of the records and forward to county attorney's office, Ethan, and copy you, now Sandra. Elizabeth answered, I don't see the revised policy changing this process. I would recommend discussing with Sandra to see how she would prefer this handled. Thank you, Jerry. And that completes the feedback received on those purpose policies.
Okay.
One thing I saw was to take it, if the suggestion of taking out the name of the Director of External Operations. I pulled up the policy and I noticed we have an email address. So if we have to change it anyway if the position changes because of the email address, because there isn't an email address for the positions for the person. So I would say we'd have to do that anyway, so I'm not as concerned about that. Otherwise, it might make sense. And other questions?
Yeah, you know, actually, you pointing that out, I was more in favor of taking out the name and just having the position, but kind of forgetting we don't have a generic email. For this is, you know, Director of Operations, it's your specific. And I also think the public, at times, if they're reaching out, if they're not sure what department to contact or whom to contact, it's good to have a name for them to go with. So I like keeping the name in. And I did appreciate the other comments. The question about forms, and I appreciate Alyssa's response that, you know, it can come through written phone call or electronic means. You don't have to use a specific form to seek those records. So I appreciate that clarification that was responded back.
When I made my edits on it previously, part of the reason my edits were so detailed
had to do with what I knew these kind of questions would come up about. I, you know, there are departments that fill a lot of requests, and they're very routine, and so I think I find it admirable. There are only two departments that actually were asking about, wait a minute, do we have to do this on routine? So apparently our wording worked for the rest of the people, or they're just going to keep on doing what they do anyway. So, you know, I too favor is give people a name. There's nothing more frustrating than to just start having to start a fish hunt as a member of the public to even figure out what person is in charge of doing this. So it is not onerous to, as the duty would be assigned to someone else later on, to go ahead and bring the record back to have that name changed, which is how this started, you know. But so I guess that's my only comment, given that this is for the review. Would like to point out, you know, the process here and about the redaction. I did appreciate Alyssa clarifying redactions, because there are so many redactions that, you know, we don't release Social Security. They should not have to be charged. The public members of the public should not have to be charged an attorney's wage for someone in community service to cross out a Social Security number or a name if a record is being requested from community services. I will continue to vote no on this, given that we are charging the actual cost of employee time.
Okay, any further comments from anyone? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the revised open records policy after 7-day review and comments.
So moved.
Second. Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Nay.
Merkin? Aye. Approved. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you, everybody, for commenting. Next is discussion consideration of Ames Urban Fringe Plan and Jerry Moore. Are you with us?
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
Yes, I am. Good morning. We put this as an additional item to give the Board the opportunity to give the planning staff some direction at the end, if you see fit, to set up the next meeting, which would be a joint meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board. And also, if the Board thought that there was some amending that needed to occur, the Board did prepare and send a letter, which was dated March 2019, that addresses some of the key components that the Board was interested in working with our partners, being the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert, on. So we prepared a memo, and so basically what you'll need is the memo, and I'll reference the land use framework map, which was posted to the Agenda Center. Those will be the primary documents. What I have for you will probably be about 15 minutes. Approximately. I won't go through all of it. There's 9 pages, but I will try to hit on the highlights. So this is timely because the Ames River Fringe Plan, as you know, expires in July of 2021. It's also a key time because the City of Ames is currently going through a comprehensive planning update process. They're Ames 2040 plan. So I'm just going to cover a little bit of background information with regard to the plan. We'll talk about the some of the goals and policies. I'll briefly touch on the 2080 agreement, which supplements the Ames Urban Fringe Plan document, which was approved 5 years after the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And also just touch on the land use designations from the land use framework map. And I was hoping that we could just have some discussion about what you see as some strengths to the current plan and policies, and maybe what some of the weaknesses are, and your thoughts about coordinating this next meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission and then thoughts in working with our partners, the City of Ames and Gilroy. So again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan was approved in 2006. I'm told that it took like 4 or 5 years to put this document together and working with our partners. 5 years after the adoption of that land use plan was the 2018 agreement, which was adopted July 11th, of 2011. The Board of Supervisors passed a resolution recently, February 18th of this year, showing support in working with Ames and Gilbert and interest in working with them to amend the current Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The City of Gilbert also passed a resolution March 2, and I'm told from the Planning and Housing Director with Ames that they, their City Council will be taking action as well, showing their support and interest in working with the county and Gilbert. So I'm told that the three entities, for the most part, did get along fairly well. But with land use planning and growth management, there's a lot of different issues that have to be addressed. So ultimately, the three entities came together to work on this document to address overlapping of regulations, inconsistencies that occurred with different policies affecting land uses with different entities, the three entities, and then the impacts of development on rural and agricultural land uses. The process involved input from the entity staff, input from the City Councils, from the Board of Supervisors. They put together what is referred to as advisory groups made up of persons who had interest in agricultural land use, environmental background, economic development interest, building and development, and they all contributed to the goals and the policy development, including input from the general public. So this is what likely we'll be going through when we work on the amendment process. So I just want to touch briefly, there's six principles, I won't go through all of them. But one talks about, with regard to population and economic growth, that each of us will strive towards intergovernmental coordination for successful planning within the Ames land use area. And again, the Ames land use fringe area is a 2-mile area which extends outward from the Ames corporate limits. Two talks about working together to preserve agricultural lands, protect rural lands from unplanned rural single family development and other forms of inefficient urbanization. Three talks about to ensure that future development will be directed and targeted toward identified growth areas. Again, Ames is going through their top plan update. They've targeted 4 locations to the east, to the south and southeast, the southwest and west within the work that they're doing with their town plan. And then 6 talks about future growth will be compatible with natural area or natural resources. These principles segue into what are goals. And as I go through some of them, think about whether or not these goals have been achieved, whether or not they have been effective. The first one talks about provide a balance of mixed land uses to avoid conflicts and to maximize efficient delivery of municipal and county services. 2 talks about premature development and preserving the highest value farmland in appropriate locations. 3 talks about to provide a variety of housing opportunities in Ames, and again, it talks about inappropriate locations. 4 opportunities for commercial and industrial development, again, in appropriate locations. 5 coordinating development decisions with the the efficient provision of public facilities and services. Six talks about protecting and preserving natural resources again, which are the floodplain, woodland areas, wetlands, and sensitive natural areas. And seven talks about providing support to visual and recreational areas as amenities.
Could you repeat that, please?
It talks about an interest in protecting visual and recreational areas in the Amesbury Fringe.
Are you?
I do apologize. That was number seven. It was not included.
Correct. It wasn't.
That's why
I never in there.
Seven found goats, and then you had six.
Yeah.
So repeat it one more time, if you would, the seventh one.
Yeah, it has to do with trying to protect and preserve visual and recreational amenities within the plan area. Yep.
Visual and recreational.
Yep.
This segues
into trying to organize the land use, which is what this is all about. You know, what type of land use do we as a community envision within this Amesbury Fringe area? And it was organized into three main categories, which get broken down into like 18 specific land use designations. So the first one is rural urban.
Can I stop you here a second? Because I'm confused about something and I want to make sure I understand it before you go further, because that might help me understand.
Sure.
So you're on page four, correct? Starting on
I'm on page four.
Okay, so then continues on five. We've got various designations here. Are some of these fringe plan designations and some of them Story County zoning designations? Or are these
all? They're all Amesbury Fringe Plan land use designations.
Okay. Is there a correlation between these designations and designations in our zoning ordinance with similar titles?
And I guess the way to think about it is in terms of like a development request. If we get a request for a subdivision, and if it's in an area that's maybe a rural service and agricultural conservation area, or specifically an ag and farm service area, the policies in the plan do not support development in those areas. So you always have to make sure that the project is consistent with the land use designation, primarily first, and then you look at the zoning for that area. So that's why on any request that we get, we want to make sure that it's consistent with the land use designation and the policies that follow that designation before we do anything else.
Okay. Thank you.
So there are the three areas. The first one's rural service and ag conservation. Typically, those are on the perimeter of the Ames River Fringe Plan area. Mostly agricultural land use, row crop production, livestock production, that type of thing. You often see maybe large parcels with maybe a single family dwelling. That's fairly common. The next one is rural urban transitional area. These are often more toward the center of the Ames River Fringe Plan area. Transition because oftentimes it's an area that's moving from a rural setting to more of an urban setting. We have policies in place that when we get a request, like a subdivision, if the city has a plan to annex the area where the property is located, they are to primarily be the primary reviewer and regulator. The county has the role and the right to review also, but we take more of a secondary role with those reviews. The development can stay in the county for a short period of time, but the goal is for it to transition to an annexation status and to receive full city services, full city sanitary sewer and water, that type of thing. And then urban service, those are close to the corporate limits of the cities. These areas are what we consider prime. They are to be annexed. In fact, nothing can get annexed unless it has a urban service area designation. In these areas, the county waives the right to review, and we follow through with the annexation process with the project. The applicant follows the city's annexation and development requirements. So this segues again into the actual land use designations. The first one that you see is ag and farm service, and this is where you want to probably take a look at the map, the land use framework map. And it's the predominant land use category in the Angels River Fringe. It's a light green, kind of solid green. And again, it's really throughout the Ames River Fringe area. As I mentioned, it's the predominant land use. And it's where you're going to see your row crop, livestock production, larger parcels. You might have a single family dwelling, farmstead, that type of thing. Urban residential is an orange color. Somewhat of an orange or a tangerine color. These are close to the city corporate limits. And again, the policy states that these are to be annexed. First, if we get a development request in these areas, they are to work with the city on the annexation process, and they will develop under the city standards. Compared to rural residential, which is the next one, that's a light yellow. They're really on the periphery of the plan, to the northwest, to the northwest. Cameron Estates was rural residential. The city's waived their right to review Cameron Estates. It was developed in the county under the county's development standards. It will likely be in the county for a while. And then that contrasts with rural transitional residential, which is bright yellow. And a case that we reviewed fairly recently is the Irons. That was a single family and a two family, single family development on the perimeter of the Ames Golf and Country Club. Again, it was in this transitional area. Ames had a plan to annex this property. The land to the south, the land by which Mr. Friedman acquired, there were some smaller parcels with single family homes on them, and it was to be a part of a bigger annexation plan. We also have a couple of commercial nodes. They look like asterisks. Red is community commercial node. It's to serve an area anywhere from 45 to 75 acres. Building sizes range from 100,000 to 800,000 square feet. Often found along intersections, arterials, and highways. And these require to be annexed into cities. Now those compare to this convenience commercial, which is blue. Those are more, think in terms of like neighborhood services, retail, services to the neighbors, provides service to people within a range of 2,000 to 3,000 people within a mile or two. Building sizes range anywhere from 35,000 square feet. Clustering of buildings is encouraged and supported. But these can actually develop in the county, but there's often a requirement to agree to annex and to ultimately meet city standards when the city's ready to annex the area. The last one that I was going to talk about is the planned industrial, and that is, I guess, kind of a pink color. One of the big projects that we reviewed was the East Industrial Expansion Area. That was actually an industrial reserve area, or ag long-term industrial reserve. They got redesignated to planned industrial, and because it's planned industrial, there's a requirement that it be annexed, which is what happened with this area. I'm speaking to the area east of I-35, north of Highway 30. Due to the location, the rail access, the large lots, limited number of landowners, this was considered a good location for the proposed industrial development. So before I go any further, does the board have any questions before I get into 28E agreement?
You said the community commercial nodes have to be, that has to be annexed. And the convenience, the other ones don't.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I thought you said that, are you referring to all the others? Because I thought you said that urban residential also needed to be annexed first.
Mm-hmm. For the large.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure my notation
requires annexation also.
Okay, I just want to make sure
before it's developed.
Right, right. Okay.
Okay, 2080 comes from Code of Iowa, Chapter 2080, which encourages, supports municipal entities to work together for a common service. In this case, it's a land use planning agreement that we have with the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert. The first thing that you'll notice is language about county zoning. It doesn't limit the county's legislative authority or the discretion in adopting land use regulations. However, we have to also be mindful that, you know, we have to be consistent in the work that we do to make sure that it's consistent with the policies of the Ames River Fringe Plan. The next thing talks about like a rezoning request. If we have a rezoning request that's in the Ames River Fringe, we have to make sure, like we talked about earlier, that the proposed land use is consistent with how it's designated. And if the designation doesn't support what's being proposed, then the policies talk about, you know, having that process take place first. So the applicant would need to submit a request to the City of Ames is what starts it, and then ultimately all three entities would need to support a land use designation change before a particular subdivision or proposed maybe commercial development could occur.
So
subdivisions are next. Again, we kind of talked about that, rural service and ag conservation. Policies in there state that cities agree to waive their right to review. Again, we had Cameron Estates, that was a rural residential land use designation. The city's waived their right. It was developed under the city standard, or the county standards. Rural urban transition, again, a good example, one that's on, you know, that I think most of the board should be familiar with is the Irons. The county did review it. However, you know, you're dealing with two different zoning standards, two different subdivision standards. And the way that we addressed several of what was being requested was through something that's in our ordinance, the land development regulations, which is called alternative compliance. So there's something in here that I want to read with regard to rural urban transitional area designation, and it says the three jurisdictions acknowledge the primacy of cities' interest in regulating development in areas that cities may at some future moment annex. Therefore, cities are tasked with giving primary review and, if appropriate, approval of any proposed division of land except for ag subdivisions which shall remain the sole province of the county. So again, that just gets to the policy that if and when cities have annexation plans, the county is able to review, but we're not a primary reviewer, which is the case with the islands. Urban service area, again, county agrees to waive our subdivision authority because these are areas that are supposed to be annexed and developed under the city standards. We talked a little bit about some of the changes that have happened. I won't go through all of them. I already mentioned the East Industrial Expansion was about 1,300 acres. It was probably the largest land area. Land use designation change that we've had since I've been here since 2015. From this agricultural long-term industrial reserve to planned area, which got annexed. We talked about the irons a few times. We also did this review of the land use to provide as a guide, provide that, you know, the market conditions are supportive and provided that if a change is needed, that we have support from the other two entities. I won't go through that, but we have recommendations. We also met planning staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission chair met with the consultants prior to the start of the AMS 2040 plan. That information has been here. I think we've talked about it before. I won't go through that. I did want to spend some time just looking at the March 26th letter. Again, this is the letter that was supported by the board. It was sent to Ames City Council and Gilbert City Council. And it really just addresses some key areas of importance that the board would like to see addressed when we start working on amendments. And that first one talks about MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization components. You know, the MPO boundary is larger than the City of Ames boundary. They deal with land use involving all kinds of modes of transportation, vehicle, bike, busing, I think rail. And there's a thought about the need to include some of this planning in the Ames River Fringe. Housing is addressed as a need. I think there's an interest in, you know, working on, focusing on a variety of housing needs, not just single family homes, but to also include the work of the Housing Trust, look at urban growth areas. Urban growth areas come from the C2C plan. It's a blue area that is shown on our C2C future land use map. When we did the review, we actually got staff made a suggestion or a recommendation that we have an area like in the northern limits of the City of Ames. Something that we suggested. Three and four, I think,
Jerry,
went together.
Jerry, this is can I interrupt the question here?
Sure.
It's under the housing. In dealing with the Ames 2040 plan, the City Council, and I know you've been following that, the City Council was talking about infill potential for higher density residential in the City of Ames. Do you know where they went on that?
What does that have to do with it?
Well, look at the Housing Trust Fund, looking at housing of various levels. I just wondered, because it does seem to fit in terms of where housing goes, and there's a lot more potential if you're doing a higher density housing, probably to have lower income housing. I just wondered how that ended up coming in there. I know it's not the urban fringe, but Ames growth, you know, whether it's inside Ames or outside of these city limits, is an issue.
And that is how it's very done. I could still add
something. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to have detailed information for you, Linda. I know that's something that they're also working on in addition to the growth areas, but I think you're right. It's something that when we work on this amendment, we need to have all this information, I think, brought to the mix so we know about what is being thought with regard to, like, redevelopment projects within inside the city. And you are correct. This aims their infringement covers the area outside the corporate limits, but I think it should be and can, you know, should be a part of what we're looking at when it comes to housing.
And I guess the reason I say that is I don't think you can separate the urban fringe from what's happening inside the city of Ames and what's happening in the county outside of the urban fringe. I think there needs to be just more coordination of all of that.
So this is Supervisor Olson. First of all, addressing the Storrs County Housing Trust Fund in particular, the trust fund can lend money in non or unincorporated areas. Okay, so I believe that was where the real inclusion is there. In addition, if there would be, now we have said we're not going to look at TIF, but there might be other mechanisms that might come forward, like a tax abatement proposal for development. I'm not pushing that, okay? You know, everybody knows it was affordable housing, getting money for housing, where I was at. But once again, then there could be in some way for the housing trust fund to play a role as it grows larger when you look at like what Polk County Housing Trust Fund does, et cetera. So I believe that's probably more why it's important rather than us playing in the area that is definitely their business of infill, is it has to do more with that, I believe. Also, as long as we're here, I'm just going to throw in here, we probably want to add and results of the housing needs study. You know, as long as we're looking at other things that are impacting and that are and added the variety of housing made available. So there always could be some development coming forward where they're going to do some multifamily units where there might be a component for subsidy or something.
Any other comments before the jury move on? Thank you for allowing me to interrupt us out.
No problem. Three and four, they go hand in hand, I think. As whether or not the urban residential areas are in the right location, you know, we've had some requests to do things that were in the urban residential area in locations where the city really wasn't ready to annex, and nor were they ready to extend city services. So those areas got, the land use designation got changed. So, and again, Ford talks about growth priorities. This is something that Ames is going through right now with their 2040 comprehensive plan update. Five talks about providing, I think there's a little information, but not a lot of information, about having there be more transparency with regard to the rural water system and what the expectations are with regard to contracts and service agreements between cities and rural water agencies and what's involved. It can be very complex. You know, some of these areas are served with rural water, and you know, while the city might have a plan to annex, landowners or developers may be required to provide buyouts, which can be cumbersome and costly. And so the thought is that there needs to be some clear information about what the expectations are when those types of situations are in place.
I've got a question, and Supervisor Olson has one. I guess my question is, what specifically is the direction that you're looking at, considering adding policies? Just to look at it and decide what we want to do, or is there a specific direction that's being thought about or suggested?
I think there's been examples of situations of developments where there were rural water systems, and you know, one location is George Washington Carver and Cameron School Road, You know, I think that's served by green or rural water. This is an area that's supposed to be annexed. The parcels on the southwest corner of the intersection were to be annexed, have not been annexed yet. And they're still working through, you know, the agreements that are in place with Xenia and the city of Ames. There's no information, really.
And it left right on that. What do you mean there's no information? And so who are we providing the information to? The developers certainly know that Xenia, that the rural water systems are hard to work with. They may not have known 5 to 10 years ago, but between just the east annexation and how long that took with whatever Central Iowa Water is called now, and Xenia, who wraps around. So who are we providing transparency to? I mean, the cities know. Okay, that are involved in this agreement. Gilbert understands it. Ames understands it. Story County understands it. Assuming Boone, if they ever would want to buy on, would understand it. But so who's the transparency for? The developers better understand it, or they're not very good developers. So what?
Landowners?
Yeah.
Landowners often aren't. They have to learn this process.
Okay, so what would we do? Give them a sheet of paper saying your land may not be as developable? It may take longer for the builder, for the developer actually to pay you off?
Well, the other thing that I have heard, and I guess I can't remember where, so I hesitate to even bring it up, but I heard that cities could allow rural water district to operate within their city boundaries.
Yeah, and Nevada looked at that. Now, you're stepping away from this one. Nevada looked at that, and that had to do with the pressure, okay? Because that had to be before the Board of Supervisors back in 2017, my first meeting, in that determining whether something about Central Iowa Rural Water, whether they were an association or a water district, because the law treated them differently. But this has been communicated many times to both of our senators, we know, in Washington. It came up when on the last trip we went on for with the chamber. So my point really being here is, what policies do we have? I mean, the only thing I can think of that we with the urban fringe would be able to do through the county or through the community, through the city, would we be able to say, hey, developer, you have to provide a piece of paper to the landowners explaining their rural water. You have to tell them to ask about their rural world. I lost. We have no control over this situation. None whatsoever. And as far as I'm unclear about the transparency.
So I guess two of us are just wondering what we would do there.
Yes.
What the option. Yeah. So I guess I would, before we start into any negotiations or any discussions or whatever we're going to do, I guess I would like to know more of what's being thought about.
Yeah. And to address the second part, or making sure that those urban service areas are current and unrealistic plans to extend, that one more caught my eye. And caught my eye because of a comment that you passed on that Mara Smith with our Planning and Zoning Commission had made about should there be some kind of time restrictions. Just can a city just say, Ames most likely, but Gilbert's becoming more and more aggressive with annexation, and can they just say we're going to annex it, but can we set a time limit about, hey, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, do we want to try and negotiate for a time limit? If you haven't annexed it within 5 years or 10 years,
Then
yeah, and that's what I thought of. Exactly, Linda. And then I
that's the situation with the irons.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
A couple of years now, and it depends on whether landowners are willing to sell or not, whether that gets annexed. But yeah, in the meantime, you sit there with a fairly good sized development, and I would just refer people to the environmental health comments about the irons and what did or didn't get done there in terms of septic, and that situation could go on for a long time now.
Right.
That's a lot of my concern about rural development is what kind of situations are we setting up, not just in the urban fringe.
And actually, if they're being developed to city standards, but they aren't annexed right away, the requirements could be higher. You know, I mean, we still are, what is our arena to play in? Our arena is to protect the environment, right? Our arena is to protect the natural areas. Our arena, I see it anyway, as our arena is to look at some type of more orderly growth. Our arena is to look at farmland, but those are all sometimes competing. And we just know that. We found that with Prairie Valley, right? About we had different, each of us maybe had different priorities out of that basket. But is it our responsibility to worry about the homeowners taking on additional costs with septic system conversions? Is that our actual area over which we're over?
Well, it's better to let the buyer beware.
Well, yeah, and then I'm back to can we require, I don't know if we can do local legislation that requires disclosures at time of sale or closing, right? I mean, what is our legal mechanism if we don't want to push for it in the urban region?
You know something, I have to say this. Even if you require the disclosures, fine, you're still letting me mess out.
Okay.
So I think that's what we told you so. Rather than we took some responsibility and didn't let it happen in the first place.
So how do we stop? Okay, so we're back to, do we turn down a subdivision proposal, you know, through this urban fringe plan? Do we make it so difficult for there to be a subdivision developed that it does get expensive and it ends up knowing that, you know, the type of septic mechanical system that Margaret went into. By the way, thank you, Margaret. That was very informative. But if we look at all these, okay, we can require all that, but it's not going to stop the cost of conversion to the city system down the road, which they're going to have to pay as a special assessment. Unless we require putting it in advance. And what happened in the Irons, if I recall here, is that the developer said it was too expensive to lay the pipe in, basically. Am I correct, Jerry?
I think that was something that was indicated by the engineer or the applicant, that he mentioned the cost in doing that.
So then our question then back to the annexation engineer, how many years out should we expect the developer to lay that pipe? Because I believe I read in here the comeback was is if we lay it too many years in advance, aren't we just giving the pipe years to sit there and either rust or decay or whatever? So yeah, we can do that. I just where is our responsibility in here about allowing it to happen? We can create those or ask for them, but are we in fact going to hinder development? The other thing that really hits me in general about the urban fringe plan right now is once the city of Ames in their 2040 designated those four areas that were all to the south and west, except for the southeast part, okay, they're not where all the growth is occurring, once again. I think that's going to be a main issue for us in taking a look at. I believe, well, I'll speak for myself, at least in when I'm thinking, I keep on all of our inquiries, all of our confusions have been so far from the people who live in the north and northwest and related to Franklin Township for the most part, right, and Gilbert. Only now in the last few days have we even received an inquiry about some possible annexation on the west side. So that's going to be an issue that's negotiating, so I'm going to bring it back around to what are our expectations about the kind of policies that we would even be able to go ahead and advocate for, given the changing landscape with a new urban fringe plan.
Well, Margaret, did you read all of Margaret's?
I did.
So she says that at the board supervisors meeting during the planning process, she suggested sewer lines be installed when the roads were being constructed in the subdivision. I was told by the applicant's representatives it would be cost prohibitive for the developer to do this. I don't think sewer lines deteriorate in 2 years.
I don't know. I'm hoping not. We do know they do in 100 years.
Yeah, they do in 100 years.
But, yeah.
So if it's the owners, so yes, honestly, because the board didn't require it, at some point, everybody there will be paying $40,000 to hook up to the city.
So really, they can pay up front and with the developer, which is the guaranteed way to go ahead and see that some things are done. Right.
Yeah, the other thing is the increased groundwater, and that's the problem that was caused with the irons, because 100 gallons per person per day, and that's all staying on site. Pretty much staying on site now as opposed to going out a big pipe. So, and that would still be the case.
Yeah,
because Ames can't hook up until they annex.
Right.
But those are the kind of situations that we're ending up creating.
So those are the kinds of things we want to look at trying to get in the plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Jared, we took over from you again. Back to you.
That's what this is for.
Well,
this is what this is for sure.
We're getting discussion, which is good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, I was just thinking. Go ahead.
So we're really talking about the issue of water quality, septic systems, all of that is very important in this area, and maybe that's an area where the Ames Urban Fringe Plan has not been sufficient in making sure that these transition areas are being adequately, the infrastructure is being adequately thought out for the time being until they become the city. And we can't, I don't know what we would do in terms of what Laura's just saying about if something isn't annexed within X years, because the reality and the irons is a perfect example. Some other things that I think people should have looked at but didn't have kept it from being annexed, and I don't know what you say. You take all the houses out, you rip the whole thing up and turn it all back into whatever. You know, so you've got to, so I don't know that that really works. But I think the realization is that we have to not assume that everything is going to be annexed as quickly as people think it's going to.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought. And I also honestly have to make the connection to what goes on outside of the urban fringe. Because we, as a county, have allowed development, but we should also think about the infrastructure and what it's doing to a rural area. And when I think, see, Margaret's 100 gallons of water gets added on, whatever time, I think of another development we've recently approved.
Mm-hmm.
I said it then. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, with regard to number 5, I was thinking maybe it would be helpful if we had not necessarily maps that showed like where these rural water systems are, but maybe like the service areas, just to provide that information, and then maybe statements about not specific information, but just general information about the agreements that cities have with the rural water systems. I think that might be part of what I was trying to get at.
I think that's a great idea visually, and I think we know from GIS already that if that were part of it, it would be relatively easy to produce by GIS between Ames and Strait Island. Yeah.
And then the bigger part of that is, you know, do we really have these urban service areas designated correctly? I mean, are these prime? Are they ready to be annexed? You know, could they be annexed tomorrow? Does the city have plans? You know, are services there to the property? Are they close by? Are they within the capital improvement planning process with the city of Ames or the city of Gilbert, if we're talking about Gilbert? And if not, then we should be looking at redesignating those areas.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of the second part of 5, which you guys have already talked about.
And that's something that would be pretty thorough, probably pretty time intensive to do, but you'd have a thorough accounting
of where everything is at.
Well, and cities, just like us, go 5 years out of CIP. At least they get added within that, you know, 5 years out, which I agree on that. It's, especially, as I say, we know where the activity is occurring versus where now the City Council of Ames has made a selection, which then leads at some point in the discussion, is Kelly to be a part of this or not? But that's a point way down the road, I guess.
Kelly and Boone County.
But yeah, but I mean, with the removed, yeah. No longer is the city, once again, the City of Ames, once again, interested in designated growth beyond the immediate touching the fringe, you know, touching their limits already to the north and northwest. And yet that's where the land is for sale. I see that we've talked before about there's some land up near where we just dealt with in Prairie Valley, $18,500 per acre. It's at $20,000. They've come down per acre, but that is clearly not the cost that farmers would pay for land.
That is a problem. Farmers can't buy that land. They can't hold it.
Right, they can't hold it. So, but anyway, moving back to the plan, trying not to hijack. Yeah. Okay.
Jerry, where are we?
Well, yeah, and then the last thing on the March 2019 letter that the board sent to the City of Ames and Gilbert was the need to maybe look at land use from I-35 interchange east to the Ames River Fringe limits, because again, the Iowa DOT has plans to close all of the county roads and all of the at-grade driveways and accesses all the way from the interchange all the way to Nevada, and I think long-term beyond Nevada. So that's what number six is, to maybe look at the land use along that area. We've got pockets of area that's zoned commercial, light industrial on the southeast corner of that interchange. We also have a pocket at 580 that's A2, agribusiness, and commercial and industrial. So again, that's there's an interest in looking at it, especially when the interchange gets constructed, which will happen fairly soon at 580th. The county will have frontage roads, which will be run from 580th west to where, like, the churches are in the Iowa DOT. There'll be a similar frontage road south of Highway 30, which will extend to the uses to the south of Highway 30. So with that, you've already talked about the email that Margaret put together, Environmental Health. I want to thank her for providing a really good, detailed response. I can go through some of those if you have questions. Now, she does talk about when we're working on projects close to cities, we're dealing with lots that often have large footprints for houses. And she mentions that, you know, there's not a lot of space often left over depending on what type of soils are in the area. And so sometimes there's the need for these alternative systems, which can be costly. She also talks about really, it's an R2 designation, and she specifically talks about Squaw Valley. They're going through a redesign of their common septic system, a package treatment system, and the cost that the homeowners will incur. I'm told also by their engineer that they've applied for like a low-interest loan through the federal government to assist with the payment of this, but apparently there's some cost for the landowners in that development as well. And then you already talked about the irons and the request that was made during the review of that to maybe install the dry sewer, which, you know, the response was that it was too costly for the developer to do that. And again, I just want to thank Margaret for her contribution and the details that she provided. And I think with that, I'd be happy to answer questions, and then from that, just segue into further discussion. The next phase of this initial review is to work with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the board. You know, we've got this letter that we that the board sent to the City of Ames and to the City of Gilbert. Are there some things on that that you see that need to be revised? And then just your ideas for, you know, working with the partners. Should we be working, or should we be reaching out to other entities as we work on this amendment? And that type of thing. And then, you know, just input, the input process. We had advisory groups before. You know, just what are your thoughts with the amendment process, and then working with the general public.
Is our full letter attached here? It isn't. You referenced it in your memo, correct?
Yeah, I just referenced it, but I can email it to you.
Well, here's the kind of thought I had. We did bring up the City of Kelly. Has Kelly been asked if they're interested? Boone County was originally a partner but didn't sign on with the 28E. That's a long time ago. I don't know why. But with the Ames 2040 plan, I can't imagine they wouldn't, excuse me, have perhaps some more interest in this. Those are two things I think we need to somehow incorporate in the planning.
I think having work groups, too, are also a good way to elicit some information, and you're hearing more from the individuals in those particular areas. I always think the more information you can garner in is better.
I think it would be very useful to have Margaret James involved in this process.
Sure, absolutely.
Because she has good insights into some of the rural
expertise in areas, absolutely.
I heard overall here about, I heard the need for us to be proactive, the desire to be proactive is in preventing problems before they occur, especially related to water quality and issues that the county may have to deal with should annexation not occur rather quickly. That's what I kind of heard. We all were out someplace there. I also, as we go forward, would like to know more from legal. I know we've asked legal to do a lot, but so this doesn't have to happen immediately. This isn't going to be a long process. But about what are the types of things that the supervisors could do to bring to the table about notice on some of the other some of the issues involved about. You pick one sewer system, you know, you've got this sewer system, this is what may happen in the future. You are in a rural water district.
Well, you know, there's something on our website, and I can't remember where it is, but Leanne's pointed it out to me before.
Okay.
So you want to live in the country. Here's some things.
Yeah, you're right, I forgot about that.
And that would be a place where we don't have to do anything in the urban fringe plan. And I don't know where it was on Story County. I'm looking for it right now. But it's things like, do you know what a septic system is? Do you know that you may end up, it doesn't say what you end up with raccoons on your deck? But I mean, seriously.
The animal control for sure.
Yeah, because I think that's what happens. I think people look at it and are used to living in an incorporated area and sometimes move out into an incorporated area and are surprised. And, you know,
that's good. That's good.
That's something we could do without getting it in the urban fringe plan. I mean, that doesn't
right.
mean there's a legal notice to people, but
right.
I think it is worth thinking about as many people who want to live out in the country.
Well, if the three of us were having I was trying to do a quick look as to where that kind of what if, you know, information. If we're having some challenges finding that maybe there's something else that we need to, you know, does it need to be on the front page that then it links it to the actual pages?
Yeah.
You know, something else to make it more clearly defined so people aren't searching around.
Mm-hmm. And it would be a starting point. It probably doesn't answer all the things.
right. That are in here. But the other thing I'm going to say, and I know that zoning outside the urban frame, that's why I asked about definitions, because I see inconsistent definitions that abound in this. And I would really appreciate it if as we work on the urban fringe plan and change that, we think about what that means in areas that aren't in the urban fringe. And urban fringe means, okay, the 2-mile limit, some of that's immediate annexation, some of it later, but how does what happens in the fringe, how should that guide us into what happens in areas that aren't being looked at for annexation?
Sure. Okay.
And aren't going to have city services. And I think that we need to think about our own land use and the plan for the county in relation to that.
Okay. And this is just a thought I read, competing priorities. Okay. Now that the urban fringe plan has been used for, officially it's going to be 10 years, but I think we were working under at least parts of it from 206 to 211 and stuff, to say what have we really found here about the inconsistent, about the priorities. Would we move them around anymore? I might move up. I did in one situation recently here. I moved up Native Prairie and the location of the Squaw Creek into decision making or whatever. So anything about balanced priorities? We mentioned it, but you know, how do we carry that out?
Mm-hmm.
How is that carried out?
I think overall, when people ask me what I think about the urban fringe plan, I say it does a good job of saying what can happen, but it doesn't do a very good job of being a policy document and saying what should happen.
Right. So I think the one time recently we've seen it where it was followed through had to do with the annexation that Freitas wanted, south of Irons. I mean, you know, that area was, and I want to say the Borgmeyer Farm. Okay, so that, right, because Gilbert put the notch on that. And that created great tension there. So I would not be surprised that comes up in all of these discussions. We also have that same, if you will, authority too. You know, it only takes two to say, yeah, I can go ahead with an application, but it takes all three or possibly more if we add more people in. How would that be separated and designated? It did make sense for that annexation. We're talking about the Irons not annexing, but that's why it didn't annex, correct?
That
Well, I understand it's not for sale, but I'm saying that there's a very real example about how this can all be on paper, but it some land wasn't for sale, and it was enough land that it couldn't be an involuntary annexation of 80-20. And then and a city government also said no. One of the partners said no. So I just would like to point out that, you know, we'll have some discussions, I suspect, from some other entities.
I think so, too, but I think also if you have the work groups and stuff, you find out what you have in paper and what's actually working in practice.
Right.
Where you can get more of that feedback.
That's
something else that we need.
Yeah.
The other thing that's mentioned in here, and I don't know if it needs to be stressed again, but I think it's important, and I'm glad it's in here, and Mr. King's aware it is, but it's the MPO, Metropolitan Planning.
Yes.
Getting that involved, because we have continually pointed out that there's three problem intersections on the northwest side of Ames that the traffic gets worse and worse, and we've not yet been able to figure out any resolution on that. And I think the Planning and Zoning Commission a few years ago, when you worked, Jerry, with the commission on the traffic study, I think that was a good first step
in the county recognizing that as we have development, we need to look at what we are doing, what that development is doing to our infrastructure, in particular our roads. So the more we can do there and encourage some joint work on those areas, the better.
Speaking of that, right off of that, the AAMTO meets tonight at 6 o'clock.
It does.
It does. I will be there. I will carry that message forward. I plan on forming it also in that as the AAMTO, what we're doing tonight is looking at some transportation improvement plans, and they've been long in the works, okay? They don't have anything to do with what we're talking about, the infrastructure. But I had already planned on carrying a message forward that 2045, there needs to be more involvement in a policy committee and more notice. John Pop and I already had served that when we went to an open house. I think I remember telling you that we delivered that notice once before, but I'm going to deliver it tonight with the entire policy committee. So, fitting right in, okay?
So, Jerry, is the next step that we meet with the Planning and Zoning Commission for further discussion next Wednesday? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah, that's the next step in the process. And I was going to ask if the board thought maybe is that too soon, or should we plan to meet, which would be June 3, with the Planning and Zoning Commission? We can prepare the notes, I guess minutes, that addresses the comments that the board made. But I think this next step, we want to probably start thinking about what our next communication will be to the City of Ames, to the City of Gilbert, and then maybe others that we might want to work with, and then what our outreach might look like, will we be using a similar outreach component? Will there be like an advisory committee as well, made up of maybe staff in addition to that, and then just how we're going to work with the general public? You know, when we worked on the 2040 comprehensive plan, we had many, many outreach sessions with the general public. I think in the early start of the planning process, and then again toward the end, which I think was probably very, very helpful.
My thought is we just had a good discussion. Sometimes it's easier to continue a discussion in the near future and say, let's wait a couple of and then wonder what we talked about.
Yep, no, I would totally concur with that.
I think that's going up and down here.
Yeah, no, I totally concur.
Okay. If you can have it ready by the 3rd.
Okay, that sounds good.
4 o'clock?
4 o'clock.
I assume you will be setting up a conference call for the meeting.
Yeah, it'll be a conference call just like we're doing today.
Okay.
I think that's good.
We appreciate your feedback. Thank you.
Appreciate the time and good thought on this. A lot has happened since this plan was first developed, and a lot's still happening right now. So I think we should really put a lot of thought and effort into it. And the work groups, we've said a few times, I agree. I think they should be very helpful so we can be thinking about who are the stakeholders that we think should be involved. Maybe that's something we could talk about, kind of the one main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Jerry. Any final thoughts?
Okay.
Pardon me.
Thank you, Paul.
Sure. Okay. We are on now to Joby. You've got probably a 2-minute item, and we made you wait half an hour. My apologies. If I had thought about it, I would have reversed that.
That's all right. I can put this on the agenda
That's why I said the end. Joby, he can wait.
Request for the replacement of the water heater to serve the jail kitchen equipment and jail laundry facility. This is one of five water heaters that serve the jail. This water heater was originally scheduled for replacement in fiscal year 22. We generally replace these water heaters every 10 to 12 years. This one was last replaced in fiscal year 10. The request is for a replacement water heater and installation cost. It is an unbudgeted expense, but will not require an amendment for additional funds. There is funds available in my current facility management operating budget to cover this expense.
So I just had a question. You said they generally last, what, 10 to 12 years or so?
Yeah, and that's been kind of the old rule of thumb. We've been reevaluating that because it's been found in the manufacturing methods.
To be sure.
So, yeah.
All right. That's what I kind of thought. I just want to make sure there wasn't something else. So.
I think a rust and corrosion
sure.
is the ultimate cause of it. It does dim a hole in the tank of it.
So.
Leaving water holes.
Okay.
Any other questions?
None. No.
Entertain a motion for approval of purchasing a replacement water heater, et cetera, for the jail at about $12,000.
So moved.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Hedden.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Approved.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Department reports. We have none. Other reports. Strategic plan review. Leanne Harder, are you on the phone?
I am. Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, this is a little bit behind schedule, so I'm going to go over some background because for two of you, this plan actually predates your time on the board. Please stop me with any questions as I'm going. But the strategic plan was first adopted, not the first strategic plan, but this one before the board right now for its annual review, was adopted in October of 2018. It does serve Story County for fiscal years 2019 to 2023, so a five-year plan. Generally, we've gone 3 to 5 years. We did this last iteration follow a process guided by a consulting firm to lead Story County to a draft plan. There are five goal areas outlined within the plan, and they address quality of life, county operations, facilities and infrastructure, technology, and then the last goal area is policy and regulations. There is an action plan built within the strategic plan, and within this, there are specific action steps identified to help guide progress toward those five goals and the overall goal of increasing efficiency and accountability within Story County. So the organization plan of the plan is outlined in a very particular manner. Again, the five large goal areas, but then within each of those, there is a more defined targeted goal followed by objectives to achieve that goal. So it works its way down to that process. And finally, there are action steps outlined for each of those objectives. In total, there are 41 action steps in the plan. Broken down within the five goal areas again, and they're given priority as of high, medium, and low for each specific action step. Are there any questions thus far on the organization of the plan? Okay. Can you hear me still?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We're fine. Go ahead.
No. Within the introduction section, the plan does address that's meant to really serve as a guiding and living document, and it states, reviewed annually, the plan is edited as needed in response to changing priorities, new funding opportunities, and highlighting project accomplishments. So what we started doing following October of 2018, and I want to give kudos to Recorder Stacey Harris because this was her suggestion. We started providing written updates to elect at the quarterly elected official and department head meetings. And then this past February, I sent out a list of action steps to really kick off the annual review. This should have started last winter, but as the board knows, I was out of the office for a leave for a period of time that delayed that. Again, of the total number of action steps of 41, 19, at least in February, were currently underway. County staff in some manner had done progress towards working to achieve the intended action or the hoped action of that step. One had been completed. So for the remaining 21 action steps, those were then sent out to elected officials and department heads for feedback, asking for updates, any discussion points, and just general feedback on what's happening on these specific 21 steps. So again, that went out in February, and then we had something happen in March that delayed it again. But what is on your agenda today is feedback on those 21 items. So I just wanted to outline the process from here, and I can revisit that as well, and then we'll go through that feedback. Today, reviewing the feedback that is before you, staff would take the comments that come from today and revising them in the plan, the steps, action steps in the plan. Then there's a couple more steps. Purposefully, we did not address priorities for all of the action steps, other than that is those that are completed. That's the next step that needs to occur. As you just discussed with your Ames Fringe, priorities may have shifted in the past almost 2 years, year and a half, since this was originally adopted. And two of the three members serving on the board right now did not have a role in the original establishment of the strategic plan. So a discussion on how the priorities lay out. If there are any additional items that should be added, and then possibly adding in the vision or the mission and the value statements. I would hope that at least for the feedback from today, I can bring a draft plan back to the board on June 9th. That will then guide the priority discussion and then have the annual review completed by the end of the month of June. Are there any questions before I head into the feedback table?
I have none.
Okay. Do you all three have a copy of the table? It's entitled 2020 Review of the Strategic Plan?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. How would you like me to proceed? Do you want me to go through each of these items or just address the comments?
Well, why don't we just go through each item? If we're going to be making some suggestions, maybe we should do it item by item.
Okay. That's how we're going to proceed, but I want to make sure that was okay with the board.
Okay.
And these are not necessarily in the same order of the strategic plan. These, again, keep in mind, these are the 21 items that I had no updates on any of these items. But they are broken down into the three priorities, the high, the medium, and the low. So the first one, there are two suggested revision languages, and this is a talk discussing, it currently just says assess broadband connectivity needs throughout Story County. One suggestion is to assess and expand broadband connectivity needs, and then the other is to start with update broadband connectivity needs.
Do we have any assessment already?
Yes. It was the Connect Iowa plan that was done. I think if we really, there were five strategic plan strategic items in that plan that we, other than like Technology Academy, some things outside the control of Story County, we delved into some greater detail. I don't necessarily say think we would just update that assessment because things have changed since 2015 and how broadband is viewed. And we did not look at it. That one looked at it from an availability standpoint rather than a needs assessment standpoint. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I remember being in a meeting or two on that. Yeah.
I think
I was just going to say that was just that was the steps Story County had to do to become a connect Iowa community and part of the connected nation.
So I think what we're doing is either one of these, I'm trying to think of how to put those together. I think what you're saying we want to do is basically expand our needs, expand and update our broadband connectivity needs assessment.
And, yeah, that would be good. Also, yeah, and this is just, this can be done as before, I would hope that, I think, didn't we involve the chamber, AABC, in this?
That would be good.
I remember
yeah.
somebody was there
yeah,
and who would have been at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the staff time was on the county to do the review of the availability, definitely.
So our first step would be develop a plan and stakeholders and all that, but it's in terms of goal, I think.
Right.
Expand and update our broadband connectivity needs assessment.
I think that's it, and maybe it falls down further in some of the other areas, but you can continue to update a plan or expand your needs assessment,
mm-hmm.
but you need to have the action of actually trying to implement
sure.
what you've done. And so,
and that's where ARINET came in, and that's also a good argument for it needs to shift away from the county, unless that is a high priority enough that we really want to take that on. About being the lead entity. But that is, I believe, I'm recalling here a little bit, you know, when Rick Sanders was first contacted, because he was bored at the time, about this ARINET,
mm-hmm.
which is why the three supervisors at the time were supportive. And I believe he met with Barb Steinbeck, okay, and some others about, as well, this might be a way to get that done without Story County having to devote the time and resources to take the lead on it. But this Connect Iowa committee, there was somebody there from Huxcom, Lee I was there from the Nerva Valley or whatever up there. So, I mean,
yeah. If we just added another phrase on that and explore options for expansion of services.
That's
yeah,
great.
That would be great.
That would be great.
Right.
Okay. I wrote it down. If you didn't catch it.
Good job.
Okay. You know, I also got kicked out. You got that?
I got that.
Okay. Then going on to the second one.
There's no proposed revision of the language, but the comments, so it's explore new opportunities to establish formalized partnerships such as 28E agreements to enhance ways to provide existing services efficiently and effectively. So, you know, you just finished the discussion that aims over a fringe plan. That is obviously formalized through a 28E agreement. I guess the more general question is this the type of statement you still want to have as an action step in your strategic plan?
And the reason I said what I did is it's an ends versus means kind of thing. That's a mechanism or a means to an end, or which is the goal. And the 28E, having more 28E agreements doesn't say we're doing a better job. It says we have more 28E agreements. We chose that mechanism. If it said enhance ways to provide existing services efficiently and effectively, and that was the standalone statement, I'd say sure, but I don't know that we need it. And I guess I'm looking and we've got a whole huge list. I'd rather get the list down, have fewer things, and make sure we're really focusing on them than have a whole lot of words.
So I seem to recall here that how this ended up with the 2080s in them was some forward thinking about would there be opportunities or needs in the future for efficiently delivering services by combining two counties, and I don't mean legally combining, but having those types of things. We did, it's been a few years back, but we shared a VA director. We Brett was over at Boone County, I believe. Shelley may be nodding. Yes, so Shelley can remember. Okay, after Boone County lost their VA director, I believe we spent for short periods of time. Margaret has served as environmental health, but I can't remember if that was Boone 2 or one was Marshall. Or was, yeah, okay, so I'm just pointing over there. But the point being that so we've already done this on some short terms in the past, and were there opportunities to look at a combination in the future? And that's probably why the 28E is in there. And then there's always, with now with COVID-19, who knows what types of agreements might end up coming about related to roads in our small communities and their needs going forward or whatever. So, but I hear your point, Linda, about it is the 2080 is a mechanism for the goal is to do it more efficiently and effectively.
Well, would you want to take out just the sentence of using 2080? Because there may be other mechanisms, and this makes it sound like we're just limiting us to
right.
One.
Our focus was on the 2080 between government entities. That was the focus one. But
right.
Certainly could come out and make it, if you want to expand that to regardless and not just focus on the government relationships, yeah, the 2080 comes out.
That's very good.
Yeah.
I just, if it were enhanced ways to provide existing services efficiently and effectively, I could work with
yeah.
That.
And I think that then goes along right with our core values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
It ties right in with that.
So I'm hearing strike out the beginning.
Hmm?
I'm hearing strike out the beginning.
Yep.
Yeah. Just start with
enhance.
Start with enhance.
Yeah.
Okay. And the next one, I want to apologize. For some reason, it didn't expand out the comments by Linda.
Okay.
I'm going to read them. I would suggest that we develop a data-based approach. What does the available data tell us about what sectors of the economy would make most sense for us to invest in our smaller communities? If we already have some info, let's discuss it and try to arrive at some strategic direction.
Okay.
So I'll read that second part again. What does the available data tell us about sectors of the economy would make most sense for us to invest in our smaller communities? If we already have some info, let's discuss it and try to arrive at some strategic direction.
So we've already done a lot of this, or where we're reliant upon is from the Story County Economic Development Group, our contract with the agency. Okay. So I read it differently and looked at this as we're going to continue offering technical assistance, period, okay, to the smaller communities. And so that's a statement to me, to support. We're going to do that. So we're, Linda, I see your comment being about where we might want to target what type of assistance. But when I heard the technical assistance, I thought about that contract. I thought about the $3,000 that we once again said, yeah, we'll do if we put in our budget and or asking our staff, although I think we're trying to limit with everything that Wells Leanne has to actually have her do anything that they could contract out. But so I just looked at it from different ways. It was a statement is we're going to continue to do this.
And I looked at it the same way. I looked at it as we've got Dustin, that's he's doing that outreach and helping those smaller communities and bring back. That's exactly how I read it too.
Okay.
Going on The next one is review current processes to achieve efficiencies of the five-year secondary road construction program. And Darren did note early on that this he did recommend removing this. Mm-hmm.
He did or did
based
not?
On a work session.
He did, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know why? I mean, I didn't know
I think,
obviously.
I think his feeling is the board is always looking at, not always, but you know, definitely annually or as situations change, reviewing that five-year secondary road program and what has to be reported in DOT and how it gets approved.
I believe also, if I could give a more specific example, because Darren does an excellent job of this, is figuring out what other construction projects are going along and can we team with them. And so an example, and I can't remember what the county's project was, but we ended up getting a higher grade of concrete to lay because they were working on the overpass. The I-35 Highway 30 overpass, we were able to tag on to that contract and get a higher grade of material for the same price. And so Darren will often look at what other type of construction projects are going around us that will allow us to purchase more in bulk or whatever. And I'm sorry, Darren's on, he can explain it better than I can, but I just know that the whole time my covered the board or been on the board, Darren has constantly looked for that. So I assume that may be part of what it was talking about.
So Darren's suggesting that we remove it.
Yeah.
Do you have any problem with that?
I don't. I do have a question for Jerry afterwards, but as far as removing it, yeah. I think it's just part of what Darren does in his job description. Jerry, if you're still on, what do you mean we will be coordinating trails planning? How would planning and development be a forefront of coordinating what is really done through conservation and secondary roads? What's the coordination part here?
Jerry, are you still on? Doesn't sound like it.
Okay.
So
there's one for follow-up
later.
Okay. Because it's, you know, I've never known where P&D would be coordinating something like that. It's usually conservation launches it, and Darren keeps very closely them apprised about what may be going on as far as paving the roads, et cetera.
Well, maybe that there's some zoning for development requests that are going on in the southwest corner of town.
That they may be notifying them about. Okay, I didn't know that. I coordinated. Maybe it's that word that's throwing me off. That's throwing me off. But that makes sense. This is bad. So just a question.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
So then the next one is identifying key corridors. Go ahead, Leanne.
No, identifying key corridors of unpaved roads with economic development opportunities, and this one, again, Darren said to remove, as well as the Supervisor Olson, based on, I think, your work session you had earlier this year.
Right.
Okay, next one is develop metrics to determine which roads get improved and which ones remain unpaved.
Yeah, I share this agreement, the comment.
Yeah. You can't see me. I'm having to take my glasses on and off and look at my computer. So
I have
to look at just imagine them doing that. Seek out public-private partnerships to improve transportation networks where possible. So Darren did recommend removing it. I think I concur with Supervisor Merkin's comment. I'm not really sure what this means to, given actually some limitations with Code of Iowa. But again, Darren's suggestion is to remove it.
So can we look at Jerry Moore's comment for just a moment here? The impact, transportation impact analysis ordinance prompts the needs discussion based on project and location. And I think that leads us back into kind of a real world example that Supervisor Merkin has taken the lead on, such that it has been so far, is the discussion about it at George Washington Carver and Cameron School Road. And I know that stalled, but it was the developer who first wanted something done, and that to me was a private partnership type of thing. I think that I believe that we were looking at when we made these goals back in 2018 is that we're going to need to sometimes require private entities to get involved in funding for some partnerships. And this was related to, yes, the transportation network as opposed to public transportation. But so the partnerships, I don't know, are they a mechanism?
Ooh. I guess. So I guess my question is define transportation networks.
Well, you've got a situation there at Cameron School Road and George Washington Harbor where you're going from a city-controlled street, okay, and then you're feeding into all of a sudden it's county roads. But we know it's going to annex, and that's a network. Our whole grid, if you will, transportation grid, transportation network, is really what it was talking about. I think it all does what we talked about earlier in reference to the AAMTO and their planning about, hey, listen more to your city to the north. I mean, Gilbert actually is part of the AAMTO now, based upon how grown the boundaries around Ames, but also the networks that they go from one government jurisdiction to another.
I'm wondering if Jerry's comment doesn't more appropriately belong into the developed metrics issue than the partnerships.
Well, possibly. We do know that we're going to need to improve some transportation, if you will, quote unquote, networks. If you look at it as where we've got one jurisdictional entity connecting with another one or seeing transition.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I think I don't know that it. I think it's more public partnerships that we actually have done because we've done some things with Huxley. We've done some things with Jerry Staley. We just had one on the agenda earlier today on consent. I think that's where, in terms of our transportation networks, we're more likely to be working with cities on a joint project. I think in terms of development, if the traffic impact analysis says this is going to happen, it's our option to, as we did with in our last meeting, say the developers will need to pay for some of the increased, you know, some help in because of the increased traffic.
Okay. So yeah, it's where you say where's the private involved as opposed to, but I got you. Still, it would be public in that scenario you just said. Developers providing the money, but the developer is not really designing it.
Right.
Or, okay, I've got
it. We're going to jointly,
right.
So I guess I would go with Darren's comment on remove this and keep the develop the metrics.
Okay.
I'm
on board with that.
Yeah. Man, head on.
I got it.
Got it?
Yes. The next one is identify opportunities to train staff members to improve interactions with customers. And I honestly don't remember the background behind this one. I don't know if it came up through the individual interviews that the consultant had.
Yeah, I don't remember. Focus. Shelley? You? Shelley's shaking her head to the negative also. It must have come up that way because I don't remember the board having any discussions about Matt complaints about interaction, you know, with their customers. Just the opposite. I think most people were pleased. There's always going to be something, but yeah, I agree.
Okay.
So we are we agreeing and taking it out?
Yeah, I think as a major goal of our strategic plan, I would add that with a caution to, if Noelle's on, since the list isn't, I now remember her saying that she wouldn't be here today, or present today, is that it's always helpful to have training sessions, you know, with this as one of the topics in some way as they set up the year's training sessions. And I would hope we would do that, but I don't know that we have to include it as a strategic plan issue, given I don't think any of us have heard also mass complaints since 2018, okay, you know, yeah, about that. Remove.
Got it.
Okay.
I got it. Next is assess and develop opportunities to train staff to adapt to new situations and change. So suggestions to leave that in with what we're dealing with right now as well as future years.
Right.
Yeah.
The last one from the plan is assess and create a plan. Assess and create. I may need to check that.
Develop
a plan to address and implement internal technology needs and updates. Upgrade.
Yeah.
Maybe improvements rather than needs. We implement improvements. We don't implement needs.
Yes. Correct. Well, yeah.
You take out the assess and create, you say develop a plan.
To address
and implement internal technology improvements.
Yeah, I think when we discussed this in 2018, the need was in there because we did have some needs. Some of them are here, right in this room, and then so there are always going to be most likely some needs put forward. But if you want to go with improvements, understanding that sometimes an improvement is actually a need, we gotta fix it.
It's just grammar. You don't implement needs.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
So develop a plan to address and implement internal technology improvements and upgrades.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I have one question: is do we already have a plan? Has already one been done? So are you developing a whole new one, or are you updating the one that you have to figure out where are you at, where were you at, and where are you at now to know where you need to go?
I believe, Bart Steinbach, are you on?
Why don't you check with Barb, and if you have a plan, do something like update. If we don't have a plan, use develop.
Yeah. So yeah. We pretty well use the budget time.
Sure.
As far as keep the list, but I don't know beyond that how formal that would be.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Okay, so that is the last of the official high priority items that were not yet tackled. And then two new are proposed. Develop and implement a plan to elevate Story County's mission and core values.
Bravo.
And then develop a countywide broadband connected plan and multi-partner public-private organizational structure to reduce the gaps in service.
I think we addressed that previously. Mine, at least.
Yeah.
So we can scratch that. We've already addressed it.
Okay. Are there any other questions on the high? Okay, go on to the medium. The first one, Supervisor Merkin recommends just starting with expand public education and raise awareness of Story County programs and offerings.
I agree.
That's a good edit.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one, there were no changes. Identify key topic areas to update or create new resource materials and training. Next one is, identify partnership opportunities through state and federally mandated improvements. And Supervisor Merkin said, again, this is a mechanism.
It's not a goal to me. And partnership for why? So what? That's kind of the... I just think some words and it doesn't really.
Okay, so you think it'll come up as we've already discussed before when we talked about partnerships, improve efficiency,
sure.
And develop partnership.
It might be a partnership may be a mechanism under expanding public education, for example.
Okay.
It might be a mechanism under any of the things we've talked about.
So this one, it fits under the overall objective to evaluate partnerships to provide services planning and growth to all of Story County. It's one of five action steps under that.
Which one are you on, Leanne? I'm sorry.
The third one, identify partnership opportunities through state and federally mandated improvements. I was just giving you some context where it was in the plan.
Okay, thank you. I thought you moved on to one.
No, I haven't. And it's probably the most general of all those items in there. So did you want to leave it in or remove it?
We can remove it. Based upon what we did previously?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And, yeah, make it more of a mechanism. Yeah.
Okay. Research and identify infrastructure funding opportunities to help municipalities and unincorporated communities.
I think we deal with that in our first priority that we have.
Yes, we did.
Priority.
Yep. Yep, I agree.
Okay, take it out. Work to identify key top-level positions that may become available within the next 5 years.
Why?
If I remember right, this was in 2017, 2018 that this was being developed, making sure that if there were changes happening that we had some continuity planning in place. And again, I was basically the scribe.
Yeah. Leanne, this is Alyssa. They put that in there for succession planning.
For succession
planning. Start thinking about it.
Just stuff that we should be doing anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, we're doing it. We haven't done a lot of it previous to the strategic plan prepared for department heads to leave and retire. So I think we're doing a better job of it now.
I think the question comes on, do you need to leave that in so that it's that constant reminder that you need to always be looking ahead for potential staff member that may be retiring, but you're also not going to know. I mean, that's
my concern with this, and I can't remember, we may have had this discussion, and my concern, and you'll see it in the next one too, is we want to be careful that we don't mislead staff. We always want to see that staff has development, but we don't want to end up in a situation, I said 5 years in advance, and you know, we're going to post these jobs. We're going to hire and then interview, and we're going to entertain interviewing from outside and hiring from outside. And so the question is, what kind of continuity are we looking at? Because we are constantly looking at our operations. And up there, we should be updating the operations. So this one was I was unsure about this one first time around. I think I put it as a low priority, you know, given about if the focus was just to train staff to automatically walk in to a position, that's not a message I'm comfortable sending. So 5 years down the road, say somebody's going to retire in 5 years, well, okay, somebody also there could be things that happen that somebody in a month from now isn't here, all kinds of things happening. From my favorite is winning the lottery. And most likely people won't say. So, I'm not sure the 5 years thing, other than Alyssa. She did make this note about retirement dates, that IFRS meetings, et cetera, for some things that HR needs to do. But I think we should be constantly looking at our operations. And that's the best succession plan.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing delete it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yep, delete it.
Okay. Next one. I'm going to read it the way Supervisor Olson has proposed. Explore training and mentor opportunities to allow staff members to develop focused to develop focused on cross-training and workforce mobility needs of Story County.
So I think
it did say, rather than that, it did say, and prepare for advancement right at the end.
I see where I should add to a lot of staff members for development focused. Okay, so I apologize for that. Once again, as I already said, you know, what are our needs? Our needs are for cross-training and workforce mobility within Story County. If that then puts them in a position later on to be a top candidate for a position or advancement, then so be it. But I really think our obligation using tax dollars is to make sure that we've got a workforce that is trained the best for Story County's needs, which could be, which I think is a lot of cross-training and the mobility and what we need for us now.
Workforce mobility means?
To be able to move somewhat from department to department. We've had several people who have moved from one office to another office and been able to pick that up. And the person that comes to mind, and I think of her favorably, is Alyssa, who was over in the auditor's office and then was doing more HR-related things, and then she moved over here to Board of Supervisors. And so that's what I think about workforce mobility, not locked into just one, maybe being, oh, can only do one thing. Some are more difficult. You just can't normally send somebody like out to animal control and expect them to start caring for animals the next day. But I mean, that's the type of mobility I'm talking about when we meet people. And we looked at this even temporarily about people coming up, you know, to obviously help in the auditor's office. But that was pretty basic. You know, but I know, but that's what I'm talking about, workforce mobility within Story County. I think a couple of the other elected officials have discussed it as we've gone through this COVID-19 thing. I'm thinking the county attorney was one. I mean, the sheriff might have mentioned it related to how he was handling some of his workforce. But it never hurts for all of us to have some of
it. I don't mind it, and I think cross-training is just something that one needs to do, and it's part of supervising an office or department. I just don't know, and I like your edit more than the way that it was originally put in there, but I'm just not sure if it rises to the level of being in a strategic plan.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's my only.
Got it.
That was my only issue.
I could go either way, whether it's in the strategic plan or not. I think there's always ways to look at ways to help prepare someone for advancement, and whether that's through cross-training or not. I understand what you're saying. From this, you're not just that it needs to be in the strategic plan. I also know that sometimes if you don't have work now, that's giving you back the opportunities or continuing to be looking at ways that you can help an individual that could, that kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the emphasis and discussions here in 2018 with the strategic plan was focused upon, you know, one of the goal areas was workforce, the actual staff themselves. I mean, you know, so that's why I think you found some of emphasis in here of them. This one I feel a little more stronger. Maybe should actually stay as an action step to help. You know, we need our staff to carry out the strategic plan. So,
there's other things. I mean, if we're looking at what we need from staff, is cross-training more important than critical and reflective thinking?
So that, and that, follow me.
I mean,
bear with me.
A lot of things we'd like to train people on. I've heard critical and reflective.
Okay, got it. There was my follow-up. So what do you want to do with that?
Yeah, but then you could have a whole list. So maybe we want to generalize it.
Explore training and mentor opportunities for staff members. Expand.
Well, then training and mentor kind of almost keep the same for the.
Yeah.
Or training and mentor opportunities allow staff members to develop and prepare for advancement.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty broad, I mean, unless you want to that one a little bit.
I want to make sure that communicates clearly if that is in fact our emphasis, is we want people who are able to carry out what Story County needs, not strictly so that they have an expectation of taking on a position when their boss goes.
Also something about that was developed and prepared for advancement, addressing Story County needs or focused on Story County needs?
Yeah, focused on Story County needs. Okay.
I think what Loris is getting at is use the term advancement interchangeably sometimes with promotion.
Right, yeah. No, that's true.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's not the right word.
And what the goal here, the overarching goal, is that people have the skills to provide, do their job the best way possible, provide the best services to Story County residents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm seeing all this other stuff as
invite a rewrite on that. I mean,
I'm not sure. I think all of this can belong in a training plan. I don't know if it belongs in a strategic plan. That's where I guess I was coming from.
Support training plans.
When I say that,
you want it totally removed is where you're headed.
Well, I'm torn, because what I see is how do we provide the services to Story County residents if it's not that we, for excellent staff who know their jobs, are trained in their jobs, and have the tools and the resources necessary to do their job. I think that is very important. So staff development, we'll call it that, is extremely important. It's just when we get all the things in, like cross-training, workforce mobility, advancement, whatever, it gets modeled and it gets like, well, then we better add just the other things that are important, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to find a simple, clean statement that says, give the staff the training and the tools so they can best provide services to Story County residents.
That's good.
Yeah.
Right there.
That's good. Can you work with that,
Leanne?
Yeah.
Okay. Provide staff with the training and the tools to provide the best services possible to Story County residents.
Yeah.
We're good?
We're good.
Yeah.
We're good. This is why we do this brainstorming stuff, huh? Okay.
I'm writing.
Okay.
Yes,
we'll wait.
Good with Linda.
Thank you.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay, so strike that whole thing and replace with provide staff with training and tools to provide the best services to Story County residents.
Yeah, you get two provides, but I know you'll find another word from one of them.
Yeah, okay.
Good.
Okay, and then the next one is...
Just stretch it. Excuse us. Laura sent that for a minute.
I believe she stated that she was okay with your edit.
Oh, yeah, the one we just did.
No.
Oh, this next one.
The next one.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay, we'll go on. Other than...
If I'm incorrect, you can double check it. I think that's what she was saying.
We should look at it. Okay.
Should I go into low priority items or wait?
Sure.
We're
almost done. Let's hold on.
Yep.
So what's your plan, Leanne? Are you going to bring this back to us for one last look, or this could be it?
One or maybe two.
Oh.
Probably two more looks. The next one, you all need to really go over the priorities. We did not focus on priorities at all in this one. We just focused on the action steps. So even for those that are currently underway, a revisiting of the priorities as well. And that's, I'll take what you have today, I'll put it in the actual strategic plan and send that back out for the discussion and priorities. And then following that discussion, I'll go back for formal adoption or approval. I will also look back and see if I can find guidance from 2018 on how the high, medium, low priorities were assigned. Mm-hmm. It does not say so, how it was assigned in the plan, but when we did the watershed plan, we used the same categorization. So I will get some guidance for you to help as you go through. Are you ready for me to continue? Okay, I have a couple more things I can do for the filler. A couple other changes you'll see are, obviously, I will need to update the pictures and the board members on the back. Mm-hmm. And then Laura's found a typo. I will fix that.
So Laura's is back. So let's go back to, I had a proposed change, the assessment means and effectiveness of existing online tools.
I'm good with your change.
Yeah, okay. I thought that's what you were telling me.
Sorry about that.
No, it's sure. I just said I wanted to make sure we got that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Then we have one more under low priority, conduct every other year. Is that where we are? Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
I have it. Sorry. But Alyssa says it's done annually anyway, so that's fine with me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And leave it in?
Leave it in. And leave it in as Alyssa had it.
Okay.
Which is every year.
The next one. Okay. Next one is conducting a formal salary survey comparisons on 5-year cycle.
I'm fine with it. I'm always for throwing things out of a strategic plan, but I can live with these.
Yes.
But the third one.
Yeah, I'm fine with leaving that one too.
You want to leave it in?
The second one, you mean, right?
The second one.
The third
one. I'm fine with it, yeah. If we want to keep it in.
Okay. Then the third one is the internal multimedia technology.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, my question was, how is that different from what the references are my priority?
Yeah, I agree.
If it's not really any different, then I say we remove it here as a low priority.
I think this one is, this one was geared just at multimedia component. The, how the board meetings are displayed.
Oh, okay.
Presented.
Yeah.
I'm just reading it. And maybe the first one can be rewritten, or maybe it's broad enough that it's within that already.
I think it's
broad enough.
I think so. I think it's broad enough.
So take this out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the last one of those that is determine alternatives to accomplish similar goals in network connectivity. So this is, when you look at the animal shelter, really, since this was sent out in February, a lot of steps have occurred with the tower going up at the animal shelter, so that they're now able to assess the S drive. So
I think
this one would be.
Should go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, as Supervisor Hedden says down below, there, when we come out of the KubeCog activation and find that whatever the new normal may be, there will probably be some things that will be in all three priority areas.
I have thought of one since then, and I think the KubeCog activation is actually one that brought it up for me. We're putting in a lot of plexiglass now because of COVID-19 issues. We found that some of our areas and some of our other buildings didn't need it because they all already had glass partitions, which were not put in because of a pandemic, but were put in because of security concerns.
I sit here in this building that we're in, and
I don't see any of that. I think that plexiglass was put in for one reason, but it's going to be temporary, because what I've been told is this is not going to last. It's going to crack. It's going to scratch eventually. Plexiglass does. I think we really need to look throughout all of county government operations and talk about security issues. It's something we really, this building is wide open. This building is totally wide open.
So that is under facilities and infrastructure generally, as one that's already underway, if you think it fits under this. So it's not one that everyone was asked to respond to, but it just says conduct study to assess needs for enhanced security, both personnel and facility improvements.
Where is this?
It's not on, it's actually in the plan itself. Because the staff is already working on it.
What does it fall under of these priorities?
It's a high priority.
Okay, but it's not on what we look at today. It's not.
No, because these, remember, these are those that we've made no, we haven't really worked on yet.
Okay, we are working on that then. That's kind of news to me. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, but it might just be the way it's worded,
well,
too.
I haven't seen work on it, I guess. Okay. I haven't seen anything coming out with any updates or anything like that.
Got it. Okay, so that's...
Yeah, it may be there that we need to prioritize it higher.
Is there a committee working on that right now, Leah?
I don't think there's a formal committee. I think it's informal discussions. I can't answer that without delving into a little bit more and refreshing my memory.
Well, could you?
But when I, I will follow up. And so the next step would be to even look at those that I've already said are currently underway and see if those need tweaked at all or if their priorities need shifted.
Yeah, because if it's currently underway, but we really don't have anybody formally working on it. It's on somebody's list somewhere, but this may be a time when we need to move it up.
Yeah.
So the reason we are discussing the ones that nothing has been done thus far, it's just like you did, kind of weed some of those out, because again, two of the three of you were not here when we originally developed that, so you probably haven't had any discussions on them whatsoever.
I appreciate it. I think there's always if we're putting words on paper and say we're going to be working on this, I don't think it hurts every now and then to say why, and that's what you got to do, understand why do we have that there. Is because the more you have, the harder it is to get anything done. So
plus also let's know who's working on it.
Yes.
And so the next steps, the sheet that was on the agenda today, you will no longer see. That was just for today's discussion. I will take the discussion today and take the actual strategic plan and highlight all the changes from today's discussion in there. And then, as I said, I'll look back and see if I find guidance on those high, medium, and low priorities. And that's what you'll focus on next. And if there are any modifications to those two or the action steps themselves that are currently underway. And I will color code them so you will know which ones are which. And I will do my best to get that so you can have that discussion on June 9th and then take direction to come back by the 16th or 23rd.
Okay. Any final comments for Leanne?
No.
Okay, good plan. Thank you. Heading on to upcoming agenda items. Does anybody have anything need to suggest?
I do not at this time.
Just that to let you know that I did receive the final draft for the new Region 11 Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, and I referred it over to Ethan.
It'll come up now whenever Ethan can look at it the next few weeks, and I'll also attach some overview information and a map of the new regions that show the, where the counties are aligned. Ours didn't change, but there were a few older regions that decided to merge with people next door.
Okay.
That's it.
Going on then, public forum number two, comments from public items not on the agenda. The board may not take action due to requirements of the meeting law, but may do so in the future. Do you have any text messages?
No text messages.
Okay, we have none, then I will close the public forum. Next, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, announcements from the supervisors.
I can just give a quick, I've got on my schedule the drainage district meeting tomorrow morning, CCMT, and then I have the statewide justice or judicial advisory committee that I'm on tomorrow afternoon. Thursday, I do have a CICS meeting that will probably overlap the leadership aims that we referenced, and I did send an email to Dustin so that he would be aware that I may not be joining for that particular one. And then just add that the Board of Health leadership class that I've been taking, we have our next class, although it's they're just going to send out an email for us to individually do the class for June, and then we submit our information and do kind of a survey afterwards. It's Monday, June 1st. That's what they've decided to do. The whole series of classes got pushed back because of COVID-19.
Okay.
What? Okay, I already told you I had the AAMPO meeting tonight. Wednesday CCMT, Thursday at HRDA, regular board meeting. Then I'll be zooming in for the virtual town hall on COVID-19 next step planning for businesses that the AEDC is offering.
When is that?
It's at noon on Thursday. So leadership aims, then of course, then the community and family resources, and then on Thursday night also, if CFR gets over that earlier, I don't have to chair it like I did last month. I'll zoom in for the jurisdictional meeting. As far as we know, we're not going to have a special meeting on Friday for Board of Supervisors unless something comes up. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay, so then just a couple of points from the meetings I've attended. I've tried to share as I remembered or whatever. So the Central Iowa Regional Transportation Planning Alliance, CERPTA, the Joint Policy and Technical Boards approved the new long-range transportation plan. You can go ahead and go on the website and download that if you want, or I can send you a copy when I get caught up on responding to emails. I want to note that goal three was promote livability, so additional attention was focused on bicycle lanes, multimodal trails, and public transit in this new plan. Goal four is to protect the environment and conserve resources, and so they increased the goal of the number of electric vehicle supply stations from the 10 to 30 at least, and trying to promote 8 additional green infrastructure projects. And we had the CERHA annual meeting, and the board voted to still not issue any more Section 8 vouchers right now, given the fact that we can't do inspections, the staff can't do inspections, there's not known exactly, you know, what's going to happen in the future. So those are kind of the highlights.
Okay. Wednesday, as mentioned, we have a drainage meeting joint with nothing. 7 o'clock CCMT, leadership aims Thursday, Asbury Rivers Board Thursday evening, followed by jurisdictional executive meeting, both of those by Zoom. And we do not have a special board meeting so far Friday. We're still on hold in case something comes up that has to be dealt with right away, but hopefully we'll kind of get back where things are returning to routine, get back to just maybe having the Tuesday meetings if we can. So that's all I have, reminding everybody that next Tuesday is primary election all day, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. here in the Admin Building and the Conservation Center and Human Services Building. It will be in-person voting. Then
next Wednesday, we go past there, we'll have our meeting with planning and zoning, which would be, I think, after our
4 p.m.
Yeah, 4 p.m. I think after our discussion today about the urban fringe plan, we'll have lots on our minds about that. I'm particularly interested in the work group issues and who the stakeholders are there, because I do think that there's time for some improvements. So, okay. Anything else? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Evans?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.